Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 13, entitled Behavior of a Perfect Person. Today we'll be doing texts 15 through 17. And it looks like 16 is on the board, or 17. Yeah, 17. So I'll just read text 15. Text 15. The advanced devotee Prahlad Maharaj duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. So 16 and 17 are actually together. 16 only has two lines. Bibarshikayam pivanam sodyamo bhagavanyata. And then together we'll do 17. Vitam chaivo diyama yamavatan bhogo vitavatamiha boginam kalu dehoyam piva bhavati nanyata vitang chaivo diyamavatang bhogo vitavatamaya boginam kalu dehoyam piva bhavati nanyata vitang chaivo diyamavatang bhogo vitavatamaya boginam kalu dehoyam piva bhavati nanyata. Ladies, please. Bevarshi, you are maintaining. Kayam, a body. Pivanam, fat. Saudyamaha, one who endeavors. Pogavan, one who enjoys. Yata, as. Vitam, money. Cha, also. Eva, certainly. Udyamavatam, of persons always engaged in economic development. Pogaha, sense gratification. Vitavatam, for persons who possess considerable wealth. Yaha, in this world. Poginam, of the enjoyers. Karmis. Kalu, indeed. Dehaha, body. Ayam, this. Piva, very fat. Pavati, becomes. Na, not. Anyata, otherwise. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work." Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would become very anxious upon seeing his fat disciples becoming pogies, or enjoyers of the senses. This attitude is herewith confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, who was surprised to see a saintly person adopting ajagara vritti and becoming very fat. In the material world also, we generally see that when a man who is poor and skinny gradually endeavors to earn money through business or some other means, he then gets the money, he enjoys the senses to his satisfaction. By enjoying the senses, one becomes fat. Therefore, in spiritual advancement, becoming fat is not at all satisfactory. Om ekana timanandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshar unmilitangya ena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namam vishnupadaya krishna prasai buddhale shimate praladananda swami tvane. Namam vishnupadaya krishna prasai buddhale shimate bhaktivedanta swami tvane. Namaste sarasvati deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshitarine. So first of all, I'd like to thank everyone for being here. It's always an honor to have the Vaishnavas to serve. And as we can see right off the bat, this is one of the advantages of hearing from a self-realized soul, one who's not bound by the constraints of what other people think about what should be heard or what should be said. Rather just saying things as they are. You know, a spiritual master cuts. Prabhupada gave the example like a surgeon using a knife. A knife can be used in so many different ways. A knife can be used to kill, but an expert surgeon can also use a knife to perform operations and surgeries and to actually heal the patient by skillfully cutting in the right places, cutting the right things. So the guru, spiritual master, also cuts. He cuts with his words and his teachings, cuts away all the false attachments and delusions that we have in our mind about what we should and shouldn't do, what this world is about, what our life is about, what our aim and objective is. And in the purport here, this is a very straightforward example of cutting. So this topic of eating, it tends to be a very delicate topic that people like to dance around and not generally address. So within our Vaishnava Siddhanta, you know, there's several ways of understanding depending upon one's level of advancement. In one extreme, there's the example of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. He epitomized minimizing eating and sleeping. He would only sleep for maybe an hour or two a day, and he would only eat a few drops of Charnamrita. You know what they come around with the bowl in the morning during Guru Puja. He'd only have 3 drops of Charnamrita every couple days or so. And that's all he would eat and all he would drink. That's a very extreme example. But at the same time, it's important to keep in mind what the ultimate example is. As Prabhupada said so many times, we shoot for the rhino. In other words, we set our sights for the highest goal and aim for that, go for that. That way, even if we fall short, we'll still achieve something greater than if we set our sights lower. So always aim for the best, aim for the topmost. That's why it's important to hear about it, to hear what these topmost examples are. But at the same time, not everyone is on that platform, and Prabhupada very heavily cautions against the pitfalls that can come from somebody artificially trying to pretend to be advanced. You know, in the case of fasting, Prabhupada mentions that there's a guideline actually for assessing to see whether the austerity that you're performing is actually a spiritual austerity or a material austerity driven by false ego. If our austerities increase our Krishna consciousness and increase the amount of service that we can render to Guru and Krishna, then that's a spiritual austerity and it should be accepted. But if that austerity increases our false pride or decreases the amount of service that we can do, then it's an austerity that should be rejected. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that a yogi neither eats too little or eats too much. So it's really a balance. With consultation with the spiritual master, with the guru, and with being honest with oneself. Because in reality, no spiritual advancement can be made without personal honesty, you know, being honest with yourself. If you're not being honest with yourself and trying to delude yourself that you're something that you're not, then you'll never know where you actually are. Just like if you have a roadmap. You may know the destination, you may know where you want to go, but if you don't know where you currently are, the map is useless, and you can't actually make any progress. So you have to know where you're starting from. Once you know your starting point, you can find your way to the destination. So being honest with yourself is understanding without illusion exactly where you are in spiritual life, exactly how advanced you are, exactly how much realization you have. And then practically working from that point. Rather than just artificially thinking, oh, I'm such a wonderful, amazing person, I'm very special, I was chosen by Krishna, and really, you know, I'm an incarnation, or, you know, I'm on the level of the Goswamis. And so you artificially adopt some extremely severe sorts of austerities or penances. I've seen it so many times even in the short time I've been here. different devotees, especially new bhaktas, tend to fall in this trap more than others. There was one bhakta I remember who got it in his head that he was this superlative tapasvi. And he wouldn't accept any of the prasad that was prepared for the devotees. Instead, he would just go out and collect some weeds and some leaves and twigs. And he would eat that. Honestly, he did this. And, you know, it lasted for, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 or 6 weeks. And then after that, he blooped. That's what happens when we try to artificially pretend to be more advanced than we actually are. So that's why I don't have personal experience of seeing this, but I've heard from others that Jayananda Prabhu, when he was the temple president in San Francisco, he had this special peanut butter halava. And he always had it on hand. And he told all the devotees there in the temple that any time you're thinking about blooping, stuff yourself until you feel like you're going to pop with this peanut butter halava. And from what I've heard, all the devotees that did that, not one of them blooped. So this is why everything should be carefully balanced, neither eating too much or eating too little, because there's a purpose for everything. In the lower stages of advancement, eating prasadam is necessary. It's very important. Prasadam, it's not ordinary food, it's not material. It's been spiritualized by Krishna. So by eating it, we're actually making spiritual advancement. We're actually becoming purified. Body, mind, and soul. And it's also a very easy way of gratifying our senses with something transcendental. Granted, it's not the best. It's not bad, but it's not the best. I remember reading about one occasion where one devotee was asking Prabhupada, mentioning about how the devotees were overeating, saying, Prabhupada, isn't this a bad thing? You know, the devotees, they're overeating, and, you know, shouldn't we be restricting how much we eat? And Prabhupada said, eating prasadam is good, but overeating prasadam is not very good. In other words, even if we overeat prasadam for whatever reason, it's still a good thing. It's still good to overindulge in prasadam. But it's not a very good thing, because we're not controlling our senses. So in the lower stages, prasadam is there for a reason. It's there on purpose. It's there as a safety net. Because when we're first beginning in Krishna consciousness, we haven't yet learned how to taste spiritual enjoyment, how to get that satisfaction through our service to satisfy our heart. And because it's the nature of the soul to always seek the highest taste, the highest pleasure, then naturally, if we're restricting our senses from sense enjoyment by following the four regulative principles, then we'll be starving for some kind of enjoyment, some kind of pleasant taste in life. That's the first big hurdle, one of the first big hurdles that new devotees have, is learning where to get this taste from. And so prasadam offers an easy outlet for satisfying that taste. Prasadam is so wonderful. Like in the Govinda's restaurant we have here, they're simple recipes. There's nothing complex about them. It's all just basic, simple things. But yet people come back time and again because they try making it at home and it doesn't taste the same. And then they ask, why does your food here in this restaurant taste so amazing? And the answer is because it's prasadam. It's a wonderful thing. It has a transcendental taste to it, something that can't be had through ordinary material activities. So by engaging our senses in this outlet, using our tongue to enjoy prasadam, then it satisfies that yearning, that desire for enjoyment. So we don't bloop in other more terrible ways. That being said, though, this is an especially important example. Because Prahlad Maharaj, he was touring the kingdom, and in the forest he came across this very effulgent, beautiful-looking saintly person that was completely naked, just laying in the forest. And he was very fatty, and Prahlad Maharaj is thinking, this is very strange, because this person, he's just laying out here in the forest, and his body is very lustrous and beautiful and quite fatty. How is this possible? So that's why he inquired from the saintly person. Because the particular type of austerity this person was doing is called ajagara vritti, which means the python austerity. So he's just laying down like a python and only accepting that which comes into his mouth involuntarily. And yet here he is, being very fatty, simply by subsisting on what of its own accord comes into his own mouth. And so it was very bewildering for Prahlad Maharaj, so he inquired. And this is a practical example of how Krishna maintains everyone and everything. It's very important to understand. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 20, Krishna says, abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruit of action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. So this is talking about akarma. There's different kinds of karma. There's vikarma, which is forbidden activities. And one subsection of vikarma is called ugra karma. It's karma that's so forbidden that the reaction that comes from it is terrifying and ferocious. That's what ugra means. It's ferocious. Prabhupada has called our so-called modern society a society of ugra karma, because everything we do in the society incurs so many karmic reactions that it's terrifying. And then there's regular karma, which is activities prescribed by the regulative injunctions of the Vedas. In other words, they're godly activities, but they still bind you. They still have a reaction, even though they are prescribed in the Vedas. And then there's vikarma, which is activity that has no fruit of result. And so in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says, this freedom from bondage of action is possible only in Krishna consciousness, when one is doing everything for Krishna. A Krishna conscious person acts out of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he has no attraction for the results of the action. He is not even attached to his personal maintenance, for everything is left to Krishna. This is what this saintly person in the forest was doing. It's explained elsewhere that those who adopt this level of renunciation, they're actually on the level of Paramahamsa. It's not just ordinary sannyasa, it's the topmost level of spiritual realization. Because they're so realizing their spiritual understanding, they understand that they don't need to do anything to maintain their material body. They can simply lie there with their mouth open, and whatever goes into their mouth, they can subsist upon that. And here this saintly person was doing this, and his body was actually quite fatty simply from doing that. Prabhupada continues in the purport. Nor is he anxious to secure things, nor to protect things already in his possession. He does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. Such an unattached person is always free from the resultant reactions of good and bad. It is as though he were not doing anything. So this is the ideal understanding for a Krishna conscious devotee. Because fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, we're no longer bound by the results of fruitive activity, even though we're engaged in all kinds of undertakings. And we shouldn't be worried about how we're going to maintain our body and soul together. Krishna naturally provides for that. He says elsewhere that in the Gita that he provides what the devotees lack and maintains that which the devotee has. And then Lord Chaitanya also further expounds on this in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 17, text 27 through 30, when he's explaining the Shikshastakam. It's mentioned, text 27. A devotee engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord should practice forbearance like that of a tree. Even if rebuked or chastised, he should not say anything to others to retaliate. For even if one cuts a tree, it never protests. Even if it's drying up and dying, it does not ask anyone for water. Thus, a Vaishnava should not ask anything from anyone else. If someone gives him something without being asked, he should accept it. But if nothing comes, a Vaishnava should be satisfied to eat whatever vegetables and fruits are easily available. One should strictly follow the principle of always chanting the holy name, and one should be satisfied with whatever he gets easily. Such devotional behavior solidly maintains one's devotional service. So this goes back to the example in today's verse from the Bhagavatam, that a Vaishnava should not ask anything from anyone else. If somebody gives him something without being asked, he should accept it. So this is the mood of this particular saintly person adopting the python austerity in the forest. He wasn't asking anything from anyone. If something came by on its own accord, he would accept it. Otherwise, he wouldn't make any personal endeavor for trying to secure his own bodily maintenance. And then elsewhere in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Antyakan, chapter 5, describing the glories of Srivas Pandit. Srivas also had an extremely high degree of spiritual realization. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to glorify this for other people to know of his degree of spiritual realization. So I'll just read a couple paragraphs from this chapter. One day the Lord called Srivas Pandit aside and asked him confidentially about some family matters. The Lord said, "I see you never go anywhere. How will you manage to make ends meet in the family? And how are you doing so presently?" Srivas Pandit replied, "My Lord, I have not the heart to go anywhere." The Lord gently prodded the subject further, asking, "You have a large family to maintain. How then will you look after them?" Srivas Pandit said, "Certainly, whatever is my destiny will come as provisions. Each person receives his due. He will surely find whatever providence provides. We shall manage with whatever comes our way." Hearing this, the Lord said, Then with this mentality, Srivas, take sannyas. Srivas replied, that is not possible for me. The Lord said, on one hand, you refuse to beg alms as a sannyas, and on the other hand, you do not make an effort for your livelihood, or even collect food door to door. How do you plan to maintain your family? I am unable to understand you. Nowadays, if one does not make the effort to go hither and thither, then nothing will come of its own. Under the circumstances, please tell me what you propose to do. Srivas Pandit said, clapping his hands thrice, here is my explanation. 1, 2, 3. The Lord insisted, kindly clarify why you have clapped thrice. What does 1, 2, 3 imply? Srivas Pandit replied calmly, I have taken a solemn vow that if after fasting for 3 days, I do not get a morsel of food by its own accord, then I will surely tie a stone around my neck and throw myself in the Ganga to drown. As soon as the Lord heard these words, he roared like thunder and said, what did you say, Srivas Pandit? You may fast due to a lack of food? By some rare chance, even Lakshmi Devi may have to go begging. But your family will undoubtedly never experience poverty. Srivas Pandit, you have already forgotten what I have said in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who worship me with devotion, meditating upon my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Those devotees who are fixed in undeviating meditation upon me never have to beg at the doorstep of anyone. All the mystic potencies automatically manifest in them, even when the personified 4 Vedic goals of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha come knocking at their doors. My servitors turn down such offers. My devotees are fully protected by my Sudarshan disc at all times, and even at the time of total annihilation of this material universe, they remain completely transcendental and unaffected. The Lord continued, even one who simply remembers my devotee, I take the responsibility for maintaining him. Surely the servitor of my servitor is most dear to me, and he certainly attains my shelter. My servitors need not have any concern about their maintenance, since I take their responsibilities on my shoulders. I will personally provide. So Srivas Pandit, you just remain happily in your house, and every requirement will automatically come to you. I am also blessing you and Sri Advaita with the boon that your transcendental bodies will never be affected by old age and debility. So that really sums up the degree of Srivas Thakur's understanding of Krishna consciousness and how Krishna is personally maintaining and taking care of everyone. So it's not so necessary to worry about the maintenance of this physical body. So it's about 15 after all in there, if there's any comments or questions. Anthony was quick with his hand, followed closely by Arjita. The question was just a clarification about if Krishna maintains or takes back those who remember his devotees. It says here, even one who simply remembers my devotee, I take the responsibility for maintaining him. Surely the servitor of my servitor is most dear to me, and he certainly attains my shelter. That's why the process of tadiya is so important. Tadiya, or otherwise known as padasevanam, is worshiping those things that are connected to Krishna. Like, for instance, One example of Didiya Seva is sweeping the temple room or cleaning Krishna's paraphernalia. That's one example of Didiya. Another example of Didiya is worshipping the Vaishnavas, worshipping the devotees. That's also Didiya Seva. And it's very, very dear to Krishna. Worshipping Tulsi Devi is Didiya. So anyone who serves Krishna's servants and remembers those devotees, they'll also attain the shelter of Krishna. That's why Prabhupada instituted having Guru Puja every day, to really drive home the importance of worshipping the Guru, worshipping the devotees. Because nowadays in the world, there is no respect for other devotees, or other people for that matter. You know, for the most part, people are only concerned about themselves. How do I get on top? How do I, you know, show myself to the world? And there's no regard for other people. But the devotees are most dear to Krishna, and by serving them nicely, it's not that just only respecting those who are superior to you. Like, for instance, in India, there is still a very strong presence of respecting and worshipping one's superiors. Whereas in America and the West and the rest of the world in general, that practically doesn't exist. But over the course of time and the degradation of Kali, they've lost their respect and mercy for their subordinates. So I was kind of shocked by that the several times that I've been there. Because here in the U.S., nobody has respect for anyone, superior or inferior. They treat everyone equally disrespectfully. Where in India, there still is respect for the superiors, so it becomes very grossly obvious the lack of respect and lack of mercy given to subordinates. You know, they treat the subordinates just the same as subordinates are treated here in the West. I'm not saying that they treat anyone worse in India than they do here. It's just that by contrast, the degree to which they venerate and pay homage and respect to the superiors, it really exemplifies how much they disrespect and trash the subordinates. And then especially as aspiring devotees, it's especially important to also remember that the jivas in general, the fallen conditioned souls, they're also Krishna's parts and parcels. And to not disrespect them either, because Krishna doesn't appreciate that either. They're also connected to Krishna. So yes, we should always remember Krishna's devotees and worship and serve them. That's extremely important. But at the same time, we should not neglect those who are not Krishna's devotees. We should still show them due respect also. That's why one who is at the topmost level of realization, who is Paramahansa level, like this Python Avadut in the jungle, someone who's on that level of realization sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna, sees everyone as ultimately being a devotee, whether they realize it and are acting on it or not. Because ultimately, we're all Krishna's separated parts and parcels. Ultimately, over the course of time, everyone will realize that they're actually a devotee, and they'll begin acting in that way. So that's why the topmost devotees, they treat everyone with tremendous respect, viewing everyone as being more advanced than they are. Archituppu? Yes.
Well, you see that thinking mostly that
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned earlier, there are different levels of realization. Specifically, though, in terms of begging alms for the specific example he provided, Lord Chaitanya wasn't asking for himself. He was asking for the glorification of Haridas Thakur, to have a feast in his honor. It wasn't for his own personal maintenance. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami exemplified that as he developed in his realization. It's documented in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because he came from an extraordinarily wealthy family. So wealthy that we can't even comprehend. He had no necessity to worry about anything. And he had a very, very, very generous allowance from his parents for his maintenance. And so what he would do is he would use that allowance to every day pay for all the prasadam for all the Vaishnavas every day. Everyone. You know, not just himself, but all the Vaishnavas. He would pay for all of them. And then eventually he stopped doing that because he was feeling like, you know, what am I being so greedy for, taking this money and, you know, buying this boga to be turned into prasadam? Really, I should just be begging. And so then he started begging from door to door. And then he started feeling like, why am I begging from door to door? I should just sit in one place and just beg from the passers-by who happened to go past me. So he was begging at the gate. And then he started feeling like, I'm simply a prostitute. I'm simply seeing these people and thinking, oh, is this person going to give me some food? Is this person going to give me some food or some money? Which is what a prostitute does. The prostitute sits in the doorway and thinks, oh, is this person going to come and, you know, enjoy my body so I can get some money? Or is this person a customer? Is that person a customer? And he was very disgusted by this mentality he was having. Is this person going to give me alms? Is that person going to give me alms? And so he even gave that up. And he went to the place behind the Jagannath temple where they throw out all the, not sewage, but all the waste washing from when they wash all the pots and, you know, clean the kitchen out. And then all the leftover rice and whatever garbage prasadam is washed out, it all goes into this pile in the back. And it just starts decomposing and stinking and smelling really bad. And he would take that decomposing prasadam and he would wash it off. And then only eat that. And then after a while he started thinking, you know, even this is being too decadent. I can't even eat this anymore. And so gradually, over the course of time, as his spiritual realization slowly progressed, he gradually gave up more and more and more according to his spiritual understanding. In other words, it was a progressive realization. It's not that he just did some jump from eating normally like everyone else to only having a couple of drops of Charanamrita every other day or so. As his spiritual realization increased and progressed, the degree to which he was being directly nourished by the spiritual energy increased also. So when he was only sleeping, you know, an hour or so every day and having a couple of drops of Charanamrita every other day or so, he was getting all his nourishment and all his energy directly from the spiritual energy. He wasn't needing it from consuming material things anymore. So that's where it takes, you know, not only input of the guru, because Lord Chaitanya asked him at every step of his development, what's going on? It's not that Raghunath Das Goswami was just going off on his own according to his own speculation. Rather, he revealed his mind to Lord Chaitanya and got feedback. And so, first of all, it requires honesty. Raghunath Das Goswami was having different realizations, being honest with himself, getting disgusted about certain things, wanting to get more spiritually realized. And then he would discuss it with his spiritual superior, his guru, get feedback. And then based upon that feedback and his personal honesty of how he wanted to progress, then he made further advancement. It's not just that he was just speculating and, oh, really, you know, I'm on this level, and then jump to some artificial level and then bloop later. So that's why we need to be honest with ourselves. And then once we have a certain idea of where we think we are, talk about it, discuss it with our spiritual superiors, guru or devotee senior to us, shiksha guru. And then that way we can properly understand how we should interact with the public in terms of our maintenance. Jai, so it's getting late. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.